Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast with Sirvan Kaur. In this episode, I am talking with my friend and fellow sacred musician, Rod Harani. I had the pleasure of singing with her on a few occasions live at Bhakti Fest, and she just came and did some backup vocals for me at Satnam Fest East in the Berkshires. She just released this beautiful album called Time to Wake Up, which is available everywhere, and you'll hear my voice on the track This Goddess. And before that, she released another one of my favorite albums, Just One Drop. She is an amazing singer. She is a Jewish priestess. She discovered, as she will tell us about in this episode, she discovered past life regression therapy as a teenager by accident. She has traveled extensively in India, and she is just a very intuitive and interesting person. Here we go. All right. So, hey, Radharani.
Hey, Sirvan.
So what are you up to?
What am I up to right now, today?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I do so many different things. Preparing for different events and creating things. Creating flyers and emails and, you know, all the various different things that musicians do.
Are you preparing stuff for Kirtan?
Preparing stuff for Kirtan. Another thing that I do is I actually sing I sing with this Jewish community in the area where I live. So the high holidays are coming up, and we do these big events with all kinds of old music, new music written to old, kind of like say mantras, like Hebrew prayers, and it's great. There's actually quite a few Kirtan musicians who join us to make this music. So
it seems like there's a big community of people whose background was Judaism. Yeah. Who have entered the Kirtan scene. I mean,
it's true, actually. It's really true.
It must be an easy or maybe like a obvious for some people sort of transition to go from one thing to another. It doesn't seem like it's like you're going away from anything, but like an incorporation.
Yeah. I think that's really true. I think there's a similarity.
I did turn my phone off. Somehow my husband can, what's the word? He can circumvent my silent mode. I don't know how he was able to do that. So the last time I saw you was at Satnam Fest in the Berkshires, and yeah. You were becoming a Judaic priestess. Is that the term?
Priestess, right.
Priestess.
Yeah, a Hebrew priestess. Yeah, so that's something that I decided to do in order to kind of learn, because it's not, I wasn't really raised with religion at all, which I really appreciate. So it gives me some background. Just a program that kind of fills in the blanks and allows you to kind of step into a role of leadership, doing different kinds of life cycle events, rituals, prayers, in order to kind of bring in a feminine energy into people's lives that have a background in Jewish faith or tradition or culture. So it's something that I'm kind of just exploring, less for my own spiritual pursuit, but more for a way for me to bring things that I discovered in India and on my own spiritual journey to people in a community that have a real commitment to being a part of each other's lives in all the major moments. And I find that really beautiful and powerful. It's kind of hard to find In, you know, in the yoga world, things are pretty transient. You know, there's a lot of showing up for this workshop or that event, and we don't really see each other anymore. And I've found that in this kind of a community, there's a commitment to showing up for births and marriages and death and difficult times. And there's an incorporation into the life part of life that I find really beautiful. So so that's what it is for me. But it's just one piece. It's one piece of what I'm.
Yeah, for sure. Does the priestess, is that something that's mainly for like officiating weddings, or like you were saying, like you do, you would do all of that. You would be there for the birth, for the, all of it.
I think, yeah, it's, we're being prepared to be there for all of it. And to also be creative. If we're invited in to be part of something that there is no pre-made ritual for, at least that's gotten lost through the patriarchy or something like that. To step in and bring in feminine wisdom and create a ritual that has some cultural resemblance to things that you might find in that community, but that's pretty brand new. And it's interesting because there are people also in Muslim and Christian communities who are starting similar programs too.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I wasn't aware either, but there was somebody in our training who came to see what we were doing, who was starting a Christian priestess program. Yeah, to bring in this kind of female touch that, you know, into spiritual life, female touch into, I guess, yes, spiritual life and life in general, as you know, to reconnect what's gotten lost. Yeah.
So what does it look like when you perform this sort of ceremony, or what could it look like?
Like a ceremony as a priestess, like mm-hmm. any kind of ceremony.
Yeah.
Well, for me, of course, my interest is in song, you know, gathering people to create, to sing together. So, and that's kind of, that's how I got involved in this community in the first place. And also, something that I do for various communities, completely outside of any kind of religious or specific spiritual context, which is something that really resonates with me, because I personally, resonate with the universal approach to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really enjoyed leading song circles and choirs that sing music from all different traditions, and we create our own rituals. So for me, ritual is completely interwoven with creating music together, everybody using their voice. And it instantly creates one of these kind of, we could call liminal spaces, or kind of time out of time atmosphere, you know, an atmosphere of transformation where you're no longer taking the logical step from here to there. You're being transported. You can make quantum leaps. You can recover. You can heal. You can transform. You can change from one person to another, from one part of life to another, transition. I think music is key to being able to do that. So that's what I, that's how I see.
You're like bringing the music into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is like just one of the amazing things for me about chant music, is like the inclusivity just by its very nature, because you're chanting in a lot of cases, not always, but in a lot of cases, things that people can easily sing along with, you know, it's like a repetitive thing, even though it might take a little while for them to learn it to, and be able to repeat it. You're doing it enough times that it's like, it's slowly inviting them in, you know? And, And so even like, say if I were to show up at a, at one of these, services, and I have no background in Judaism. Actually, my dad was Jewish, or is, I suppose. He's still alive. Yeah, my dad is Jewish, so therefore I'm not technically Jewish, but you know, I have some background.
My dad is also Jewish, so I'm not technically Jewish either. But okay. My mother converted before I was born.
So, oh, interesting. So, okay.
So depends who you ask.
Has no connection to Judaism. His mom pretended to be not Jewish.
Wow.
In the entertainment industry in Hollywood, which doesn't make any sense to me. Like, why wouldn't you let your Jewish flag, you know, like
almost,
there were so many, I don't know, maybe there were some other reasons for her not to, to want to be perceived that way. She was very status oriented, but in any event, my dad never identified with Judaism and never, you know, taught me anything about it. I don't think he knew anything about it, but anyway, so she decided to become Buddhist. So my grandmother was a Buddhist. and so that was, yeah, sort of my dad's spiritual background. But I don't know why I brought that up. Oh, that I don't
know. Just going to a ritual.
So I don't know any of the mantras. I recognize a couple of words because Kirtan Rabbi visited Bhakti Fest a few years ago and I caught his set. So I remember some of the words, not all the, like the whole sentence, but yeah. So,
right? Yeah. Yay. I'm so glad.
That's interesting though. Okay. So
that's fascinating. And it sounds like
you're not considered Jewish either.
It depends who you ask.
It depends, like, on you.
it really does. You know, in the community that I'm involved in, there are people who are what we call Jews by choice, you know, like, mm-hmm. It's very liberal as far as the, kind of like, laws that somebody made up about it, you know. it's really just about how do you want to pray.
Uh-huh.
I think you know, it's fascinating what you say, that you know, you do have some of this like as a heritage, but what you weren't raised in it. There's a lot of people who I think have that background, and for me, also, I was raised with just a little bit of it, you know, just enough to have some sense of what it sounds like, what the Hebrew prayers sound like, or when the holidays are. But I think it's really exciting for me to kind of open up that door to having a heritage in that way, a spiritual heritage, because my chosen spirituality, my chosen spiritual path feels so disconnected from my birth family and kind of like, I don't know what you call it, ancestral history. Like, it feels like, you know, spirituality was completely separated and severed from, it was almost a rebellion in a way to become spiritual. So to have a spiritual language that links me to my parents, grandparents, ancestors, feels like a reconnection that, and a healing almost, in the sense of like, spirituality doesn't have to be outside of family life. And, or, you know, you don't have to renounce the world in order to, right, become a spirit, have a spiritual life, or become a realized person, or whatever your goal is. But for me, those things felt really disconnected in my journey. So, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm so excited. I want to invite you to come.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah. I'm going to be on the East Coast in a few weeks. So
really
connect. Yeah.
Let's connect.
Yeah. But so about the heritage thing, that's really intriguing to me that you would say that, because I'm going through something very similar, but not about Judaism, but about having grown up in France. And for me, it was a very traumatic experience. It was something that's kind of separated me from my dad because he wasn't there a lot. He wasn't present. I mean, it's a very long story, but I didn't have a very good flavor for this experience that I had in my life. And yet I speak fluent French and I have all these French experiences. And so, you know, to just go, I'm American, it just doesn't totally, you know, it's just not totally true for me. Wow. But recently I was asked to appear on this podcast where they were going to be talking about basically I do these teachings with this channel, Gary, who channels this group of beings, Joshua, anyway. So I'm part of this group and there's a whole part of them who speak French. And so they invited me to be on this podcast where we'd talk about this stuff in French. But to talk about spirituality in French was so foreign to me.
Wow.
It was not something that I spoke in French. Everything I've experienced spiritually has been in English. So it felt very healing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, in a sense, you know, the perception that you're, you know, Jewish or French or American or human or a woman or whatever, in a sense, it's all illusion, you know, like it's not really who we truly are, but it is sort of
we're
this
just
nice
vibrations.
Point of connection. Yeah.
Right. But it's a point of connection to the X axis, time, right? History and story.
Yeah.
I think so many of us are kind of discovering spirituality as this chosen identity, you know, our spiritual path, right? Mm-hmm. And to realize that, like, or even cultural identity, or, you know, national identity, you know, to discover that, like, we have roots. It is an interesting, it's an interesting pursuit. It's a really interesting pursuit, and I'm delighted to hear your.
Yeah. When did you go to India for the first time?
I was 24 when I went for the first time, but I had been wanting to go since I was probably 18. I think that was when the first really strong seed was.
Because you were doing yoga, or what was the attraction?
I wasn't yet doing yoga. Actually, maybe around that time I began to discover yoga, but in my teens, I had a really strong spiritual calling, I guess you could say. When I was 16, I discovered how to guide like a deep relaxation trance. And I started to experiment with my friends, who were all teenagers, and some of them were pretty skeptical, but I ended up doing past life regressions. And
you just kind of stumbled upon it?
I stumbled upon it.
That's great.
So yeah, you can imagine this like teenager on Long Island and, you know, I got wanting to like, kind of at the time I called it hypnotize, you know, hypnotize all of my friends and leave them in past life regressions. And you know, it was kind of hard for me to find people who were really willing to participate in that. But what was amazing was that even if they didn't even believe in past lives, even if they had no interest in spiritual topics, my friends became my spiritual teachers. And in that state, I could ask them questions about the nature of the universe. What is time? Why are we here? You know, like, why did you come into this life? You know, what is your journey about? People answered my questions without even a moment's thought. And they were so beautifully eloquent and completely like strong in their knowledge and their wisdom about how everything works, even if as the person that they were in this lifetime, they had no interest or belief or concept of these things. So that's really where things began. Although, of course, I must have had a seed before that in order to lead me to that. But I started off with the thought that this spirituality was something quite new that was being revealed to me and to others in this time. But it wasn't until I was in college that I realized, oh, this has actually been around for a very long time, all around the world, in these little kind of hidden, secreted traditions, or in some places less secreted, but these, you know, that there were teachers out there who were holding keys to opening this up, awakening. As an 18 year old, I wanted to become enlightened in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. That was what I really wanted. So when I realized that there might be teachers out there who could help me find my way to that, I wanted to go more than anything in the world. And it took me a few years to break out of my parents' fears around that, me traveling by myself, and to save money, and to build up the courage to go against what everyone was telling me would be a frightening experience, would be a dangerous experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at 24, I made it over there. And that began a very long journey back and forth to India, always listening deeply to my experiences, because I knew that there were teachers for me and that I would be guided to them.
So when you say that you didn't know where you were going the first time specifically in terms of teachers, or?
I didn't know.
No, so but you bought a plane ticket and you arrived, and then what?
Yeah. Well, so at that point, I had a job that I had to return to. I had started a program, after school programs, and I managed to get myself 2 months away. But in the future, I would have I would get one-way tickets. Hmm. But at that time, I landed with one Indian person who I'd met, who'd invited me. Probably didn't expect me to take her up on the offer, but and she went with me to Vrindavan, which was a place that I had actually dreamt of. I didn't really know much about it. Didn't even know it was a place, but the word came into my mind. So this is kind of how things began, as I started to dream about India, places I should go to, what I should do when I got there, that kind of thing. It's all quite a story, but you know, from Vrindavan, I departed from her and went off on my own way. And the way things unfolded for me in India was quite mystical. The people I met, the dreams I had, the teachers that I came across, the things they taught me. The way everything comes together, it was as if I was already in a course of study. And the main teacher was my own experience. Mm-hmm. The main teacher was the world itself. It taught me through the people that I met. Yeah, there were teachers that I met along the way, but they only played certain roles. They gave me certain pieces of a puzzle. And I love them dearly, but the word guru doesn't necessarily fit for me, because I haven't surrendered to their instruction completely. Mm-hmm. But in any case, yeah, going off on many tangents, but
cool. That's what I love.
I'm actually writing all of this right now, so this is one of the big projects that I'm working on.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, when you were talking about the past life regressions, if you recorded them or if you wrote them down when you were a teenager.
Did you? I tried. It's funny, because I did try as a teenager, and you know, we're talking about the 90s here, so we're talking about tapes. Yeah.
That's what I used my karaoke machine for a lot, was recording stuff like diary entries and
nice. And you still have that?
I'm not a keeper.
Okay.
In the sense of I'm not a hoarder. Let's put it that
way. Okay.
No, I sort of have the opposite illness where I chronically get rid of stuff. So no, I probably don't. Unless my parents saved it and put it in a box and was like, she's going to want this later.
Yeah. Right. I don't think so. Yeah. Sometimes it's just stuff sometimes, I was not successful at recording. Things would always happen. And I just started to take it as, okay, I'm not supposed to record this stuff. But eventually starting in around college, I did start writing things down, and I have a few recordings that I managed to make. But yeah, usually it would just be me with a pen and a piece of paper, mm-hmm. jotting down the most important pieces. Of that I will write about.
So right now you're working on a book, like an autobiography.
Yeah, an autobiographical book. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun to add to your collection of spiritual offerings.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So do you go to India like once a year, or do you have sort of a cycle for this, or
not anymore? Whenever. In fact, the last time I went was probably a year and a half ago or something around there. And I knew at that time that I didn't have to go anymore, at least for my own growth.
Mm.
The growth was now about sharing what I've learned and integrating. And at some point, maybe I will go back. But I knew deeply that I could go back, but it wouldn't be for me. I could guide people there. I could go for if I was interested. But my own path with India has come to a completion. And now that makes it possible for me to write about it, because the story has this beautiful arc and a conclusion in a way. So it's a certain era
of life. Yeah.
But this beautiful place in my heart, that land, that the goddess India.
Yeah.
Have you been?
No, so I was just gonna say India is intriguing to me because I've never been. I had many connections to India, I feel like. My best friend in high school was of Indian descent. My best friend in college was of Indian descent. This was before I did any yoga or knew what mantras were, or even like what Sikhism was or Hinduism, because they were both Hindu. My college friend invited me to come to her wedding. And I didn't go. I think it was part of this whole journey that I've gone on, which has to do with a sense of worthiness of like, you know, making decisions that feel really big, or rather avoiding them, you know? So in my mind, like traveling to India felt really daunting and scary at that time. And, required more preparation. She gave me like a month's notice for her wedding. And I was like, no, that's crazy. And I just dismissed it. Mm. So I didn't go that time. I could have gone again to visit her when I went to Japan and then to New Zealand. So I was sort of like in the area, you know, at least closer than I was in Los Angeles. I was on the East Coast at that point, but also made the choice not to do that because I convinced myself that that would be too much trouble to rearrange my trip. I had already planned the whole thing in my head. So yeah, not really any good reason why I haven't gone, but that, again, that was even before I was, you know, invested in the practices of India. And then since then, it just seemed like things would just come up and it would just sort of get pushed back as a trip. And right now, honestly, I don't have any interest in going. Mm-hmm. But that could change.
Yeah. So you're being fed with your life where you are.
Yeah, well, when people ask me, because, you know, I don't look as Sikh these days as I used to, but when people would see me and they would ask me, you know, what are you? You know, I practice Sikhism. Where have you ever been to India? That's like the first question people will always ask. And I find it an interesting one because no religions basically, correct me if I'm wrong, come from the United States. So I find it interesting that people associate
Mormon.
There you go. Hey, have you been to, it's not Utah even. It's like the middle of the country where it was founded, right? It was like
Utah.
Is it Utah where they found where like the wisdom descended upon?
I have a funny story to tell you about this, which is a total deviation.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll
just finish my thought before it's really short. But anyway, the whole point is that I find it funny that people associate like, oh, you're Sikh, it must be because you went to India and they can, you know. I don't know why, like they convinced you to be Sikh there, or you just fell in love with it there because you were traveling and decided, you know, you wanted to bring it back with you or something. Because nobody asks a Christian if they've been to, you know, the birthplace of Jesus, or if they, you know, if they've been to Israel or Jerusalem or something. But
true.
Anyway, so.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I guess people weren't so familiar with Kundalini yoga maybe at the time, and this is all really quite a recent phenomenon.
Yeah,
it's global.
But I feel like if you said hi, you would look at me, and I'm white, and obviously not Indian, or at least not looking. And I said hi, I'm Hindu. They might ask me the same question, you know, because it's sort of like, why would you choose that? That's an interesting one, you know.
Right. Yeah. Very true. Very true.
So, okay, your LDS Mormon story.
Okay. My mom was kind of researching some of her background, which, by the way, is a lot French. So we have similar backgrounds. She came across a relative who, it appears, was a storyteller. Appears that he wrote the Book of Mormon as a story, and John Smith, he claims that John Smith took it from him.
No.
And there was a lawsuit. There was a lawsuit. Yep. Because he said, you know, who's this guy? Those are my stories, like, that I was telling as a storyteller. Like it's this really strange thing.
Like fiction. He was writing funny.
From his imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his
historical record. Yeah, I always thought that about Mormonism. I'm like, this is just amazing imagination. What a fantastic
Very fantastical story. Very fantastical story. I mean, who knows if that's real, but there is, it's historically documented that there was a lawsuit that this person claims to have been plagiarized. And that was a distant relative of mine. So yes, funny aside.
So had he wanted to, he could have founded Mormonism, and he totally missed the boat on that.
He missed the boat. He missed the boat. But anyway. So you said so many interesting things too. I'm curious. You say you look less Sikh these days. I'm curious about that. Is that a transition for you, or?
Yeah. So I tried on many sort of ways of doing the Sikh thing. And so in the beginning, I think I tried wearing a lot of white. And then I decide, okay, for 40 days, because that's a big thing in Kundalini yoga, I'm going to wear just bana, like meaning the religious attire, which is a specific sort of dress and pants and a turban. I was wearing a turban all the time anyway. And I just felt so inauthentic and like my skin would crawl like wearing this. And not that the clothing itself repulsed me in any way. Like, I think it looks very beautiful, on many women and men and whatever. But for myself, it just didn't feel like me. And so I explored that a little bit, and I was asking myself, like, is it because I have a concept of myself a certain way, and maybe I'm evolving out of that, and that's why this is feeling so uncomfortable? So, you know, I took it loosely for a while, and I'd wear certain clothes to Gurdwara, which is our temple, and I just really, I think in the last year, I've just come to the conclusion, but, you know, like you were saying, it's not really a conclusion. I mean, there's still a story, but that I just feel so much more comfortable in different kinds of clothes. So I want to be guided by my spirit, you know, I want to be guided by my intuition and my inspiration, you know, so that I feel like that's the most authentic version of me. Lately it, sometimes I've been wanting to wrap my head and other times I haven't. And so I'm listening to that and I'm interested.
Yeah. That seems like it would be a very, just fascinating journey with twists and turns and different points of view.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't grow up with religion either. So the fact that I wanted to do this and it seemed so strict to my parents was very scary for them, I think, in the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Like, why would you sign up for this, you know, imprisonment, basically.
Right. Yeah. Did they call it a cult ever?
Yes. Yeah. They got scared because they did the Google search and
the scandals.
Yeah, exactly. It's what you put on your body. Clothing is interesting too, because, you know, our motivation for wearing clothing is so, it varies so much, you know, like, are we wearing clothing because it's cold? Are we wearing clothing to protect us from the sun? Are we wearing clothing because we're afraid of showing our naked body outside? Yeah, a lot of the time, you know.
Right. Is it a self-expression? Is it for other people? Are we trying to attract certain, you know, there's all.
Are we trying to fit in?
Or trying to fit in, or trying to not fit in. Or
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I used clothing a lot as a teenager to, like, really stand out. You know, that was, well, that didn't, yeah. That didn't change me.
It's funny, we have so many interesting crossovers. Because I think I told you once that I had, like, a little bit of a punk rock phase.
Did you? No, I don't remember that.
That was early teens.
You were the punk rock past life regressionist.
I guess. Those two do seem to go well together, though, you know? There's a certain rebellion going on.
Well, and there's a desire to belong to, you know, you find a community and you're like, oh, this feels so good. I want to do what they're doing so they recognize me as one of their own. And of course, you're not really saying this to yourself, but that's kind of what's going on in your head.
Yeah. Even if the idea is to be different, you're actually doing it to be the same as the people who are being different in the same way you are.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I picked up on that as a teenager, that kind of, I don't know if you would call it hypocrisy or just kind of a twisted logic.
Yeah, irony?
Irony, thank you. Yeah. It's a little more forgiving.
There were the difference was in high school, there were no people dressing like me. that I didn't have a lot of friends in high school. So that was sort of like that I think the clothing and my sense of differentness was my identity. Oh, wow. Wow. Oh my gosh. The electricity went out here. Are you still there?
So yes, the rainstorm cut us off there. And that's where we left it. Anyway, if you want to find out more about Radharani and her music, it's available all over iTunes and Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon and everywhere digital music is streamed and downloaded. Her website is radharanimusic.com. I will post the link in the description of the podcast. And I will see you or hear you or you will hear me in the next podcast.